just 5 years since the Ryder Cup was last hosted on European soil when Team Europe triumphed in emphatic style.
And Phil Mickelson shakes the hand of Francesco Molinari, and Europe have won the Ryder Cup, and it's the Open champion who seals the win. The new superstar of European golf, as Frankie goes to Hollywood and seals the deal for Europe.
A 17.5, 10.5 victory for Thomas Bjorn's men in 2018. But in 2021, the United States won convincingly at Whistling Straits.
Never, ever in doubt. That guarantees the United States a half point. And that is going to be enough to win this Ryder Cup.
Now it's back, and for the first time, this magnificent event will be hosted in Rome at the Marco Simoni Golf and Country Club. The picks have been made, the teams are complete, and we are poised to bring you up to speed with everything you need to know ahead of one of the year's biggest sporting events. The 2023 Ryder Cup on Ryder Cup Radio and the official Ryder Cup podcast, brought to you by City. Hello and welcome to the official Ryder Cup podcast presented by City. I'm Marcus Buckland. Not long to wait now until in front of an extraordinary amphitheatre, the first ball will be struck on the first hole at the Marco Simoni course in Rome early on the Friday morning of September the 29th. So many possibilities. I'm delighted right now to be in the company of two pros, one former, one current, with multiple tour titles to their names, Robert Lee and Lee Slattery. Now, Rob, we know the teams. We know all too well the recent history of this event in Europe in particular, where the Americans haven't triumphed for 30 years. Looking ahead to the 2023 edition, what jumps out of the page at you?
Well, wearing my European hat, as I have to, because I'll be cheering for the boys in blue and gold, I can only replace the despair of 2 years ago. And a young American team absolutely thrashed us at Whistling Straits to a feeling of hope going into Rome this time. I thought 2 years ago that when we go into this event, I would feel like, again, we've got no chance of winning. But 2 years is a long time in the world of golf, and I'm actually very, very up on the Europeans' chances. So my feeling, my overriding feeling, is one of hope.
Well, that's a very positive start. Indeed. From a European point of view, we are, I hasten to add, going to be incredibly neutral during this preview. Lee, the Americans are clearly overdue success on foreign soil. How tough do you think this Ryder Cup is to call?
I think it is very tough. I think the Europeans have showed the last few weeks that we have a lot of players in form, which has made a huge difference. I think even going back 2 or 3 months ago, I'd have had America as huge favourites, but I just think it's become a lot tighter. I still have them as slight favourites, but I think in general, I think it's going to be a close match. I think it's going to be a great Ryder Cup.
Well, I think that's what everybody wants more than anything else. The thrills, the spills, the drama, the excitement is guaranteed. But the closer the finish comes Sunday afternoon, well, the better. Certainly from a neutral point of view, but of course there aren't too many neutrals involved. Whatever does happen, there are going to be some classic moments. Just before we focus on what's to come, can you both just give us a favourite Ryder Cup moment or moments from years gone by, Rob?
My favourite Ryder Cup moment is when Sam Torrance holed that putt across the 18th green. And I'm digging back in my brain now, and I'm pretty sure it was 1985. At the Belfry, and he put his arm, that iconic picture of Sam, arms up in the air, and he had it was a 8802 or something like that, blade putter, which you don't see anyone using nowadays. And the eruption on that 18th green when he holed that putt was just quite phenomenal. That I think that of all the Ryder Cup moments, that's the one that sticks in my head the most.
Yeah, that was 85, 30. 8 years ago, if my memory's correct. Where did the years go?
I read about it in the book somewhere. I wasn't actually there.
Lee, what about you?
You know, I was going to say exactly the same. It is the one image that sticks out in my head. there. But I'd also probably say Valderrama. I think growing up as a kid, the reason I started playing golf was because of Seve Ballesteros. And I just remember that Ryder Cup was very special. We had a lot of great players at that time. But I just remember him running onto the fairways and just giving advice to everybody. And he just wanted it so much. And obviously, in living memory of Seve as well with the Ryder Cup, it was an extra special occasion. And so that's probably my favourite Ryder Cup of all. Yeah, no question.
Well, I wonder who is destined to make the headlines and provide the abiding memories this time around. Let's get to the nuts and bolts of it all. We'll start with Team Europe. Now, 12 players, of course, on both sides. 6 qualified via either the European or the World Points list. As far as the Europeans are concerned, those 6 were Rory McIlroy, who is going to make his 7th consecutive appearance. John Rahm, who picked up 3.5 points in defeat 2 years ago, the reigning Masters champion, of course. Bob McIntyre, one of 4 rookies in the European side. Victor Hovland, the recently crowned FedEx champion, of course. Tyrrell Hatton, who is making his 3rd successive appearance, and Matt Fitzpatrick, also playing for the 3rd time, the 2022 US Open champion. The other 6 players were picked by the captain, Luke Donald, with the help of his vice-captains, Francesco Molinari, Eduardo Molinari, Jose Maria Olazabal, Thomas Bjorn and Nicholas Kolsarts. Those picks were in early September, and they were Tommy Fleetwood, who picked up 4 points from 4 with Francesco Molinari, memorably in Paris, the last time Europe staged this event. Seb Straka, another of the debutants, tied for 2nd at the Open this year. Justin Rose, he's going to provide plenty of experience, his 6th Ryder Cup. Shane Lowry, who hasn't been in the greatest of form, but he's an Open champion, of course. He's a man for the big occasion. Nicolai Højgaard, debutant, a Dane, 22 years of age, and the very exciting Ludvig Åberg, another debutant from Sweden who is 23. Right, before we go any further, let's hear the thoughts of the Team Europe captain, Luke Donald, on the strength of his side.
As a group, just such good balance. You know, some people that have experience, some superstars. We have 3 of the top 4 in the world. We have some young blood that are raring and ready to go. We have guys that have been there before and secured points for Europe. And I think it's a great mix. These guys are 12 fearless golfers that are ready to write their own chapter and their history in these Ryder Cup books. And I'm excited to be joining and being a small part of their journey.
12 fearless golfers ready to write their chapter. Well, of course, Luke has been there. He's done it in the past. Rob, is that lineup pretty much what you expected?
Well, you say fearless until they get on the first tee, morning foursomes on Friday. There's a lot of fear around there, let me tell you. Yeah, you know, when I looked at the team forming through the year and working out who I thought was going to make it, it's pretty well there. The only I would have probably gone for, if you're going to pick Lowry, which I would have done, and Justin Rose, which I would have done, then you're really looking at Åberg was the wild card. He came out of the ether, really. Much fated as world number one amateur, Ben Hogan winner twice, turned professional. He's only been playing pro golf for 5 minutes. And we saw what he did under the cosh last 2 weeks on the DP World Tour, 4th in Czech. And he wins in the mountains under the biggest spotlight of all to sharp elbow his way into Luke Donald's team. And it really only left one spot between, you could argue, a few players. But the 2 players that really looked like getting in were either Nicolai or Adrian Maronk, Polish player. And it was for me, a toss-up between those 2. And I thought it would go to Adrian Maronk, I must say. I thought he'd done enough because he was head in the world rankings, on the qualifying list, in the world rankings as it stands, etc., etc. But Luke and his team decided to give it to Nicolai, who is a very fine player.
Yeah. Listen, Lee, as captain, you've got to make your decisions and you know they're not going to please everybody. Have you got any particular issues with the names he's stuck with?
Not, I wouldn't say issues. No, I mean, they're all fabulous players and we all know that Nicolai is an incredible player. You know, and I'm sure he'd be very excited to be playing in the team now. But I'm the same as Rob in the sense that I feel like Maronk did deserve a spot in that team. He's playing great. He's won at that golf course. And it, for me, it was quite an easy pick, you know, and I was sort of looking at players like maybe Shane Lowry's not in form, but at the same time, he brings so much to a Ryder Cup. You could argue that somebody like Larazabel would have brought a lot to a Ryder Cup. There's just so many players to pick from. I think this is the problem with having six wild cards is there's just so much choice, and it's so hard for Luke Donald. I mean, he's made some great choices there. I mean, you can't fault any of the picks. They've all done what they need to do, and it's a strong team.
I mean, the fascinating thing about this is that we're talking about an individual sport, of course, but the strength of the team is so important. And I know they look at all the stats and they work out who's going to play best with somebody else in the foursomes and the four balls based on how far they hit it, etc., etc. But the one thing that stats and computers can't tell you is whether team spirit is going to be fostered, that sort of thing. When you look at this lineup, do you like the mix, the experience, the very exciting young players coming through? Does it suggest to you that he's got a winning formula in that regard, irrespective of the fact that maybe he could have picked A over B?
Look, there's 24 really good players here, and the team that plays the best is going to win. You can make all the plans you want and all the pairings you want. In the end, in those 3 days, it's the ones that turn up for either side that are going to tip the balance. And usually, as we always say, well, you know, the losing team say, well, they hold so many putts. Yeah, they did. That's why they won. It's like when you lose a penalty shootout, you say, well, the other team scored more penalties. Yes, that's right. That's what they did. So one of those teams is going to do one of those things. It's going to be tight. I think it's going to be very close. I think the home crowd for the Europeans is going to be huge.
Yeah, and if we look at recent editions of the Ryder Cup, the Americans win in America, the Europeans win in Europe. But Lee, the one thing that strikes me, especially the longer that record goes on, the more pressure is placed on the shoulders of the Europeans. They have actually lost two of the last three Ryder Cups, if you take into account that two of the last three have been in America. So there's a little bit of extra pressure, is there not, to ensure that they maintain their perfect record of the past 30 years in Europe?
Yeah, I mean, it is very, very tricky, you know. But I mean, we've played in many of those Ryder Cups as underdogs, and we've managed to win a lot of them. So I think we talk about team spirit with the Europeans, and it's certainly something that the Americans have worked on over the last few Ryder Cups, is trying to, you know, create this team spirit and come together a little bit more. And I think that's made the difference with them as well. So they've kind of learnt off us. And if you play as a team and you're there for one another, and you know, we know that Larazabel has given some great speeches in the past to his players the night before the singles, and there's just so much about the team spirit that can make a difference. And I think that's where the Europeans could be very strong. You know, I think they do have a great team spirit, and I think with all the fans behind them, it could make the difference, no question.
Yeah, the team spirit has not been in doubt. Of course, the big question when it comes to the Ryder Cup, particularly for the Americans, is what's the team spirit like afterwards? But that's a whole different ball game. Now, Tommy Fleetwood was the obvious pick for Luke Donald. As I mentioned, he won 4 points from four in 2018 alongside Francesco Molinari. He was part of the disappointment of 2021, of course, at Whistling Straits. He cannot wait to be back on European soil.
I mean, the home crowd's the most amazing thing. And, you know, it's the greatest atmosphere we can play in front of, for sure. I think, you know, I honestly enjoy both experiences. I felt like in an away Ryder Cup, you get so close to your teammates and everybody that's involved in Team Europe. And I actually love that side of it. But there's nothing like a home crowd, like lifting you on their shoulders and carrying you along. And I can't wait to play in front of them all.
One half of Mollywood from Paris in 2018. And of course, part of the fun of this, Lee and Rob, is trying to work out who's going to go with who. That combination in the French capital worked wonders. Who's Fleetwood going to do the business with this time, would you suggest?
I mean, I've sort of sketched down what I think my morning four balls might look like. Do you want that now, or are we saving it? Is that a bit of cherry later on the cake? What do you want?
I don't think we can wait any longer for these pearls of wisdom.
So I've got Tommy Fleetwood playing with Justin Rose in the first morning foursomes.
Okay. Reasons being?
Well, Justin Rose has been a phenomenal Ryder Cup player. He's got a fantastic winning record. It's very hard to have a winning record when you look at your Ryder Cup exploits over your career. And Justin Rose's record is super impressive. 13 wins, 8 losses, 2 halves matches. he just gets it. He's just really good at it. And Rose in foursomes with Tommy Fleetwood, ultimate ball striker, I think it's a really strong combination.
Yeah, I must say, you've painted a very persuasive picture. We'll come back to some more of your sort of pearls of wisdom in a moment. Lee, if you're part of that selection process, and I appreciate that we haven't got all the data that can tell us exactly what everyone's going to do off a specific hole, et cetera, but are there some clear combinations that you think will have a very good chance of working for Europe?
Yeah, I mean, I would say that I'd put Tommy now into this category of being a very experienced player. I mean, obviously 4 years ago when he parted Molinari, you could argue that Molinari was the experienced player. But yeah, I mean, I think Tommy has now become a leader. You know, he's a lot more confident in his abilities. And I mean, I know Tommy really well, and he's changed a lot in the last 5 or 10 years. He's matured a lot, and he's just waiting for that big win, I think, which I think will be a major. But I certainly think when it comes to Ryder Cup, I would want to partner Tommy. I think you could put anyone with Tommy in foursomes because he just doesn't really hit a bad shot. You know, you could argue that I'd put someone with him that maybe is a little bit more inexperienced, that maybe puts well, and you know, that could be a strong team. But it's just so hard. I mean, I'm one of these people. I like to put experience with, you know, the younger talent, and they can kind of feed off each other a little bit. But yeah, I mean, that would be a very strong pairing to put out first, Rob. I've got to be honest, Justin and Tommy, it'd be a great pairing, don't get me wrong. And they know each other very well. Yeah, but that is a strong pairing. That would certainly, that would make a statement, I think, first out.
All right, well, we're ticking that box then. Of course, both teams have four rookies, four debutants. And Lee makes a very good point there, Rob. You've got to balance things up because you can be as prepared as possible, prepared as you think you should be, and then, as you said, you walk out on the first tee on the first day and you're hit by this, and it's going to be extraordinary in Rome with the way they've set up the stands and all the rest of it. So how are you going to look after those rookies?
Well, before we get there, I bumped into Sam Torrance in the car park at Sunningdale a few days ago, and I said to Sam, we're talking about Ryder Cup, and I said, you know, it always amazes me because you get in there early on the Monday. You're not kicking off for real until Friday. You have a couple of days practice and do some evening things that you have to do in your media duties. And I said to him, by Wednesday, it's like, come on, let's. I'm ready. Yeah. He said, Rob, he said, you cannot believe how quick the week from Monday morning to when you stood on a tee on Friday morning goes. He said, it goes so fast. You start off thinking this is slow, and then it accelerates at turbo speed. And now you stood on the tee and you've got to hit a shot. He said, and your knees are shaking, and and the only colour you can see is brown. Yeah. So
you're wishing it was Monday morning.
Oh,
again.
He said, it's just frightening. He says, it comes at you so fast, like an express train. You just, the hardest thing as a rookie is to be ready for it. And getting the balance of, I think, accepted wisdom is that everybody plays the first day, because then you get everybody involved. Even if you've played for the first time in your first match and you lose, you want to go out there the second day and get a point back. So get everybody invested in that first day. And I think that's kind of accepted wisdom. And it'll be interesting in that first morning foursomes, how many of the rookies get out there and how Luke and his team see it unwinding. But yes, but as a rookie, as an experience, a life experience, Ryder Cup must be just second to none. Second to none.
Yeah. Well, just a reminder of those four rookies. They are Bob McIntyre, who, of course, picked himself, courtesy of what he's done on the tour. Sepp Straka, who, you know, it's quite easy to forget that he was tied for second at the Open this year. And we've mentioned Nikolaj Højgaard and Ludvig Åberg. And Lee, Rob's touched on what he's already achieved. The fact that he only turned pro in June, did everything that he could to become world number one amateur. I mean, he was so ridiculously successful, and Luke Donald's described him as a generational player. Everybody, I think, is expecting so much from him. Are you confident that he will be able to deliver under the intense spotlight that he's going to find himself in?
I think absolutely. I think the amateur game now is so strong. You know, to reach number one as an amateur now, you've got to play a lot of good golf under a lot of pressure. You know, in team events and other things as well. But I saw him. I played in Czech Republic a couple of weeks ago, and he was obviously there, and he has got a confidence about him. He looks like he's been on tour for 10 years. You know, I mean, he's incredible, and I don't see any weakness in his game as well. You know, like, I watch him hit the ball. It's very impressive. You look at him around the greens, it's very impressive. You know, you look how calm he is, he's very impressive. And obviously he can play great under pressure. So there's no weakness there. And I just think, you know, Luke has obviously had a few good chats with him. He's played with him. He's impressed him a lot. And I mean, obviously I don't know the guy, but from what I can see watching him on television, he does look the full package. I mean, he looks incredible, and I'm sure he's going to play many Ryder Cups in the future. So this is a little bit of experience for him in some ways. It's incredible, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what a lot of people were saying, actually. If he hadn't have been selected for 2023, then, you know, assuming nothing dramatic happened in terms of injuries, etc., he could look forward to playing in the next eight. That's how highly regarded he is. There is experience to the team. I've mentioned Rory McIlroy is going to be playing for the seventh consecutive time. We've touched upon Justin Rose already. Shane Lowry, not actually that experienced when it comes to Ryder Cups, but a man for the big occasion, of course, an Open champion. He's performed magnificently on the big stage more than once. And he is very much looking forward to the team aspect of the Ryder Cup.
Look, obviously we don't get to do it that often, play team golf. And I feel like, you know, I grew up in a family of team sports, and it's what I love. It's, you know, the experience I had at Whistling Straits, even though we got beaten quite heavily, was incredible and something that I'll remember forever. So, like I said, I'm very excited for a home Ryder Cup. I'm looking to kind of create more memories. And, you know, a lot of my big goals this year were getting to Rome and, you know, trying to win that Ryder Cup back. And everything over these next few weeks is going to be put into doing that. And hopefully we can come out on top.
All these players set such high standards for themselves, Rob, and we've seen what Shane can do over the years. One thing that intrigues me, you know, if deep down you know you're not playing as well as you can and you're heading towards a Ryder Cup, how do you deal with that? And how do you think, Shane, because I mean, he hasn't been bad by any means, but he's not found his A game consistently for a while, has he?
No, I mean, he'd probably admit that, but he's had a little bit of time to practice. He's going to be going to the BMW, which, of course, he loves. We know that. And then he's going to head to the Ryder Cup, and he hasn't experienced a home Ryder Cup. Now, you heard Shane talking about coming from a family that's involved in team sports. That's the thing about golf. Most of the time, you're on your own. You're batting for yourself. 99% of your entire lifetime playing golf, it's for you. This is the one occasion where you're doing it with another 11 players. And that team environment at a Ryder Cup can't be duplicated anywhere else. It just can't be. And Shane's going to have an experience with these guys that will be his closer friends forever, because that's what happens. Your friendships, if you've already got them, get deeper, and if you haven't got them, you make them. Yeah. And they stick with you for, you have a brotherhood that stays with you regardless of what you do in the world of golf, regardless what tour you're on. That brotherhood stays there forever, and Shane's going to get to experience what it's like to be in amongst European people at a European continent. It's going to be incredible for him, because in his own words, he's going to thrive in that team environment. So it is hard to just turn your game on. Like, we're going to talk about the Americans and Justin Thomas. It's very hard to do that. But I would back Shane to flourish in this particular instance.
You've got this extraordinary set of notes in front of you. So give us a few more of the Robert Lee pairings, at least to start things off.
Well, I'll tell you what I will say, is that both teams have got four sets of four rookies. But the Americans have got also four players that have only played one Ryder Cup. So they've got eight players that have got four Ryder Cups between them. That's a very inexperienced side. The Europeans have more Ryder Cup experience. Average age around 30 for both of them, 30 and 30.3. Just whatever way you look at this, whatever way whatever you dig up out of the two teams, however you look at your view to who you think might win or who's got the advantage today, you wake up tomorrow, it's something else, it's the opposite. It is leading to a really tightly contested Ryder Cup. And you can say for the neutral, yeah, that's what we want. We all want the drama on the last day, you know, hanging on to your seat if you're there in Rome watching, or hanging on to your remote control watching the TV, you know, biting your nails at home. It provides that 99% of the time, the Ryder Cup, and I suspect this year is going to be no different.
Well, it's a very good answer, but you didn't give me any more pairings there.
Oh, do you want another foursome pairings?
Well, yes, I do. Well,
okay, so Tommy and Justin Rose were they're my anchor.
Yes.
Foursomes pair. They're the fourth match in the morning, okay, on Friday when we get there to Marcus Simone. Leading off the foursomes it's like a no-brainer pairing. It's Shane and Rory.
Oh.
Shane and Rory are going out match number one in the foursomes Friday morning for Europe. My second pairing could be my favourite pairing out of both teams, and that is the two calm, demeanoured, gentle men that we have in the European side, John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton. John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton will frighten the life out of anybody, so they're going to out-bad the opposition. They're match number two.
That's dangerous, potentially.
This is my world. And then the third match, I'm going to put Victor Hovland out with Ludvig Åberg. So the two Scandinavians playing together. We get a rookie out there in a third match. And, I mean, the way Victor's playing, the way Åberg finished off his Ryder Cup qualification, that could be fireworks.
Rahm and Hatton.
I've got you going now, haven't I?
I actually think you... How long before we can name Robert Lee as a Team Europe captain? Because he's got it sussed here. But Rahm and Hatton sounds great, but it potentially could end in lots of tears, couldn't it?
Oh, jeepers. That is a pairing that I didn't put them two together at all. I actually like the thought of Tyrrell and Shane playing together, but maybe in a four bubble, because I know that those two are good pals as well over in the US. And, you know, then it frees Rory up to play with one of the rookies in a four bubble match. So, but I mean, I've not gone into the same sort of research as what Rob has there. I've got no notes in front of me at all, but I love the way you're thinking there, Rob. I've got to be honest. I think that is a fiery morning.
It is.
It sounds as though Lee goes more down the Tom Watson line of captaincy in comparison to you and your.
Am I slightly reckless, or what are you saying?
Well, no. I mean, so many of the European captains of late have. Paul McGinley's the obvious example. Have really gone into the minutiae.
Yes, very much.
And it's good, but I still take the point as well that you just don't know for sure what's going to happen until it gets underway. And you've got to be prepared to make some dramatic changes.
Do you know what? You can be the way Ryder Cup history views you as a captain. If you won and you were horrible, you're a great captain. And if you lose and you were brilliant, you're not a very good captain. That's the way it is. You've got to get the W. So for Luke Donald and for Zach Johnson, winning, of course, is everything. And they will be viewed and their efforts, no matter how magnificent they were and how much effort and hours and sleepless nights they put into it, they will be viewed as either a winning Ryder Cup captain or a losing Ryder Cup captain. And that, in the end, is all that's going to count.
That's the beauty and the cruelty of sport. Just a final word, Lee, on the makeup of this European team. For many years, Sergio Garcia has been the go-to guy, by all accounts, behind the scenes. Yeah. And obviously, he's no longer part of the job. So when you look at that team, Rory with his seven appearances, John Rahm, of course, who's a colossus in many ways, the experience of Justin Rose... Who do you think is going to be pivotal alongside the captaincy team in maintaining the equilibrium throughout the week?
Without question, Rory. I mean, if Rory turns up and plays well, you know, he's the man for me. There's no question about it. I mean, Justin Rose, yeah, he's got a lot of experience and he'll be great behind the scenes and everything. But I just think that Rory's just so iconic in the world of golf. And, you know, it'd almost be like Tiger Woods playing on their team. He is definitely the talisman for our team. And yeah, if he turns up and plays well, he's going to make a lot of birdies. He's going to get everybody excited. And, you know, it'll make it a special Ryder Cup. We want more of those, you know, those fist bumps. And, you know, when he played Patrick Reed that time and he really got the crowd going, that's what we want to see. And being in Europe as well, it'd be everything, wouldn't it? If you can really get the crowd going, Rory, I think that would make the Ryder Cup.
Couldn't agree more. Rory is a talisman for the European side, and that's why I've put him out in that first match with Shane Lowry in the foursomes. There'll be a lot of Irish people in Rome. That place will just be taking off. Put those two on the tee against the two best Americans that are going out in the first group. Rory likes to lead from the front. He doesn't shy from the spotlight at all, never has done. He's willing to put his head up above the parapet and be outspoken. And the reason media love him is because he's just so open. He's not guarded. He's open and honest. And yeah, sometimes you might say something, you go, "Oh, I'm not sure about that." But you've got to love him for it. You've got to love the fact that he will just speak his mind, and you get the authentic Rory. Rory is authentic. He is the Ryder Cup captain that's not the captain. He's the captain on the pitch. That's what he is.
Yeah, OK. Well, a lot of responsibility resting on his shoulders. Those are the 12 quotes. Fearless, according to Luke Donald. Close quotes. Europeans looking to ensure glory in Rome, commiseration to the likes of Rasmus Højgaard, Adrian Mronk in particular, Victor Perez, you could throw in Adrian Ategi as well, who narrowly missed out. You are listening to the official Ryder Cup podcast, brought to you by City, proud worldwide partner of the Ryder Cup. As we turn our attention to Team USA, same format as far as the inclusion of their 12 players was concerned. Six qualifiers, six wild cards. The six qualifiers were Scottie Scheffler, who's going to be making his second appearance, Wyndham Clark, the reigning US Open champion, of course, Brian Harman, the reigning Open champion, Patrick Cantlay, playing for the second time for his country, Max Homer, one of the four debutants, Xander Schauffele, who has lined up once before. Now, their captain, Zach Johnson, backed by Stuart Sink, Steve Stricker, Davis Love III, Jim Furyk and Fred Couples. Then picked Sam Burns, a debutant. Ricky Fowler, a rejuvenated Ricky Fowler, of course, making his fifth appearance. He's got a 3-7-5 record in Ryder Cups. Brooks Koepka. Now, we know all about Brooks, of course. We know that come the majors again this year, he has shone. Champion at the PGA, tied for second at the Masters. Colin Morikawa is in for a second time. Jordan Spieth is back once again. And most interesting in terms of these selections, so too is his very close friend, Justin Thomas. But as we all know, has been horrendously out of sorts over the past 6 months or so. Right, let's get an American perspective from the top American golf broadcaster, Matt Adams, who joins us now from the States. Matty, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, gents?
Well, we're getting very excited. We've been treated, I don't know if you've already heard, to some wonderful potential European pairings from a future European captain, Mr. Robert Lee. And we want something similar from you. But first things first, the balance of that American 12. Are you sitting comfortably in the knowledge of who's going to represent your nation in Rome?
I think for the most part, I am. I think much like Luke Donald's picks, particularly with, you know, Adrian, we've got a similar situation with Justin Thomas, with questions being raised, notwithstanding the incredibly impressive record he has in team competition, but his form coming in is not terribly strong, to say the least. But by and large, I think the rest of the team is looking good. I do think that given the venue and given the setup that Luke Donald has implied that he's going to employ, that there is some reason for concerns in the American squad, too, in terms of what they're bringing in an effort to break 30 years since they've won in Europe.
Yeah, we can't beat around the bush, Matty. It has been 30 years of hurt for you guys in Europe. Can you pinpoint precisely why the Americans have struggled and perhaps why it might be different this time around?
Well, I can discuss what I saw in person when we were in Paris, and that was, I remember one match in particular that I was sent out to on Sunday. It was Brooks Koepka against Paul Casey. And it was the sixth hole, if memory serves me, which was a somewhat straightaway, slightly dogleg left par four, not overwhelming in length or of particular distinction, nice little hole. And Paul got up there and hit a little hybrid right into the middle of the fairway, just as easy as could be. And Brooks got up there and smashed into a driver. And as he had done all week, he pulled it left into the deep rough on that side. And from there, he had to hack it out like a farmer. And so it illustrated to me the fact that the golf course itself and the way that it was set up was not one that could be overcome with just pure brawn, that you had to employ strategy. And when you look at the United States team, there's definitely some challenges when it comes to driving accuracy, which isn't unusual particularly in the PGA Tour, because of the way they have it set up. Many times it is what they call a bomb and gouge. So, I'm concerned about that area too.
Okay, well, we'll talk more about the condition of the course in a moment. Can't wait to hear, though, from Rob. And first from Lee about Justin Thomas. We've touched upon his form or lack of. Are the Americans right? Is Zach Johnson right, Lee, to keep faith in a man who's often referred to as their talisman, but has actually only played in two Ryder Cups so far?
That really does surprise me. You know, I was saying before, I thought he played in at least four. Form's one thing. It's about how he sort of gets his game up for this Ryder Cup. I mean, if anyone can do it, it will be him. And bringing that Spieth-Thomas partnership together again, it might just ignite something. But we all know he's a class act. And at some point, he's going to be back to his best. And you know, I just hope that this Ryder Cup, you know, actually does that, you know, actually pulls his game back up to where it should be and gets him back on the right path. Because I think he's not just an important player in the Ryder Cup. I think he's an important player in the United States and, you know, has a lot of fans out here. I mean, he comes over, he's played quite a few European events as well. And, you know, the Europeans love him over here. And, you know, he's just great for the sport. And I just hope this can turn his game around. And I wish him all the best with that.
Well, we'll get Captain Lee's thoughts on the American pick of JT in just a moment. First, we'll hear from the man, still as determined as ever to be a star despite his difficult year.
I did put a lot of pressure on myself to make this team because it does mean so much to me. But that being said, I feel like it was a valuable learning experience for me and something that I will use and learn going forward. I would say that these other guys can attest, you can want something too bad. And I'm sure all of us have tried to win golf tournaments too much or tried to force the issue. And there was potentially times this season I did. I'm very, very fortunate to be here. And Zach has been very vocal and made it sound great that, you know, we are all equal on this team. And I feel I'm just as important as everybody else. And my teammates have voiced that the same way. So I'm very, very excited.
Well, there are perhaps similarities to a couple of additions back on the European side when they kept faith with Sergio Garcia, Rob, despite the fact that he'd fallen below his best form. I mean, the difference there is that Garcia had starred on many occasions in the Ryder Cup and he came to the fore on that occasion.
I mean, Sergio, the greatest Ryder Cup points winner ever. And I think when you're looking from a European point of view, a lesser Sergio Garcia would still be better than the next in line. You know, we've been greater than the sum of our parts, the Europeans, and punched above our weight, really, in terms of our world rankings. Now, Justin Thomas, I was told that Zach and JT shared a house at the Open. So there must have been a lot of Ryder Cup. You can imagine the chat. Game's not great. I'm desperate to play in the Ryder Cup, which Justin Thomas is, and he's a great player. They have a lot of confidence in Justin Thomas. He brings a lot to the team room. We've talked about that already as regards the European. And I think the feeling must be that he's going to find it because he's been a guy that's really dived into what it is to be a Ryder Cup player. They feel like he's going to find it. But I'm telling you now, that Friday morning, stood on that first tee, it's a lonely place to be if you don't feel that your game's in some sort of shape.
Well, there's an obvious pairing between him and his close friend Jordan Spieth, and maybe that's got something to do with it. Matty, what do you think the thought process was and how do you think JT is going to respond to what will clearly be a huge challenge for him, as talented as he is, as brilliant as he's been over the past 5 years or so?
I was assigned to the Wyndham Championship, which was the last regular PGA Tour event before the start of the FedEx Cup playoffs. And for most of it, I was actually assigned to Justin Thomas. So I watched him really play a spirited round, really play a spirited tournament in his efforts to make it into the FedEx Cup playoffs, because I think at that time he was of the belief that if he failed to make the FedEx Cup playoffs, he probably damaged significantly his chances of getting on the Ryder Cup team. He put forth a really good effort and he showed us some ball striking. He showed us some grit. He nearly holed out at 18 and he would have had to in order to make it inside the cut line. Alas, on that mark of 70, he was at 71st. So I too hope for the good of the event that he finds his former form and he starts to play reacting to targets instead of playing golf swing. But remember, it was only a few short weeks before that event at the Wyndham where he admitted to us that his confidence was lower than it had ever been. So if, as Rob is saying, those demons are, in fact, revisited on the first tee of a Ryder Cup, I don't have any great expectations. I only have hope that Justin Thomas is able to find himself.
Well, he said just now that he's got the faith of his team, obviously. He's got the faith of his captain, who is Zach Johnson. Let's see what he's had to say.
They're talented. They're fierce competitors. They want to be there. They want to be in a position. I think what I see with these 12 guys is that, you know, hear me out. It's great playing over here in front of our fans. It's some of those memories are the ones I'm going to cherish the most. At the same time, I think certain individuals are kind of wired. They're kind of built for the difficulty. They're kind of built for walking into the Lions Den, walking into a stadium, into a hostile environment. And I'm confident in all 12 of these guys, but specifically these six guys, to do just that. We have experience in that, and we have some new blood in that too. But we've got enough experience that I think we can help the rookies along when it comes to that notion. I love going over there and playing. I love when it's difficult. I love knowing that it's going to be uncomfortable. That's what motivates me. That's why I work. And with these six in particular, I have the utmost confidence that's exactly why they work. They want to push themselves. For lack of a better phrase, they're comfortable in the uncomfortable. And these are the 12 guys that are going to push to achieve that, the main goal, which is strictly to keep the cup here in the United States.
That's a good little insight. Comfortable with the uncomfortable. Maddie, I mentioned obviously that Spieth and JT is an obvious pairing. Where else in particular do you think Zach will lean heavily to try and get the right balance from his 12?
Judging from what we've heard, we know that they had a team meeting with the six players who automatically qualified. And according to the captain, they heavily used that opportunity to say, who are the other six that you think I should pick for this team? It's been part of an overarching effort that they call Team USA, meaning it is encumbrances of both the Ryder Cup and the President's Cup, and that it is a combined effort. It's funny because I remember a couple of years ago asking Davis Love the recent record of Team USA, and he gave me the combined record instead of breaking it down by Ryder Cup and President's Cup. So I think very much you're going to see Scottie Scheffler and Sam Burns together. I absolutely would expect that to be a pairing. I think it would be very interesting to see Wyndham Clark, who, while a major champion, is still a Ryder Cup rookie, paired alongside of Brian Harman, the same situation, because Harman's attributes are accuracy and the attributes of Wyndham Clark is massive distance. It's like the two of them seem to balance each other off perfectly in that regard. So I would like to see that combination come together. I would love to see Brooks Koepka and Colin Morikawa. Again, there's a semblance to me of kind of a yin and a yang there in terms of the power and the accuracy. So I think that would be enjoyable too. And obviously Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, as you mentioned, I think I would not be surprised if Zach Johnson doesn't send them out first and just try to put the nerves at bay and let them get underway.
Well, that's really interesting. In particular, the possibility of Clark and Harman, two debutants, playing together. Now, I don't have the records, Lee and Rob, but I'm guessing that that hasn't happened too often in the past. It's obviously a risky selection pick, isn't it?
Yeah, but you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing when you look at Ryder Cup pairings. Sometimes the most unlikely, and when you reason, you would think, I haven't got enough reasons to put those two together. That pair becomes a great pair. And if you put a couple of rookies out and they win in the morning and you have plans for the afternoon, and let's say they win well, all of a sudden, do you know what? We might stick them out in the afternoon. All that sort of stuff goes on. And yeah, it is a risk. But like we were saying, everyone gets a go on day one. you've got to get the rookies and everybody invested in the next 2 days that are coming away. You don't want anyone that hasn't played on Friday. That now is accepted wisdom, and I expect all the rookies to have at least one round of golf on Friday. It's important.
And Lee, as you look at that American team, and I know that if you're part of the European team, you just focus mainly on your strengths, but if you're looking across at the opposition, which names in particular strike a degree of fear in you? Not just for their form this year, but for what they might be able to achieve as part of a collective as well.
Yeah, I mean, two players in particular for me. I love the way Scheffler plays. I mean, he just never seemed a bad shot. I mean, we're all talking about his putting this year, but yeah, he's had a fabulous year. And another player that I've been fortunate enough to play with in the past as well in the race to Dubai 1 year was Scheffler. And, you know, that guy just has not got a weakness. He's a fabulous player. And, you know, again, if I was a player in that American team, I would want to partner him in every single match. I just think he makes a lot of birdies. He has no weakness. I mean, you could almost go through the whole American squad. I mean, there just aren't any bad players in that side. And even guys like Brian Harman, you know, he's been around for such a long time. And we all know now, you know, after the British Open, he's a tough cookie. You know, he's a guy that I wouldn't want to play against in a, you know, on a one-to-one in a singles match. You know, he gets that putter go and he's almost unbeatable. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a very strong team. And although some haven't got that much experience, you know, we've seen a lot of them over the last few years and they're all fabulous players. So, yeah, I mean, I almost think you could pair anybody with anybody in that team.
Did you play with Scotty or Xander? Because you went double Scheffler there.
Yes. You get your Schefflers and your Schauffelers in a bit of a souffle.
Schauffele, yeah. I think Schauffele. I think he's. I mean, he's such a nice guy as well. I mean, I'm sure Scotty is, but I've never met Scotty. But I know that. Yeah, Xander's just an incredible player. I mean, the time I played with him, he was very impressive. I think he shot 6 under par, very easy. But you know, just surprised me how long he hit the ball as well. You know, he was long off the tee and. He looked great around the greens. I mean, just a fabulous player, you know, and I just think he's almost underachieved. He's won a lot as a professional. He's been in that top 10 in the world for a long time now, but could have won 10 more tournaments. I think his game is that strong. So, yeah, I would like to play with him every single match if I was playing in that team.
Well, Scheffler and Schauffele could be a little bit of a mouthful for any of the commentators lucky enough to follow them around, but they'll be up to the challenge. Maddy, just going back to you, and I hate to harp on about the 30 years of hurt that the Americans have suffered on European soil. But based on what has gone before of late, how desperate is the desire for the American team to win? How important do you think it is for the American team to come back over the Atlantic and return with the Ryder Cup?
I think it's very important to the American team that they do break the curse and win for the first time in Europe in these three decades. So I think that's something that they'll pin up on the wall. And I think that's something that they are very much going to be aiming for in terms of the strength and health of the Ryder Cup. Not that it needs any particular help in this regard, but I think it always helps build up the competition where in an instance such as we're going into, coming off a loss the last time, that the European team would walk away for a win from a home game, if you please, this time in Rome. So I don't think that from a sport standpoint, from a Ryder Cup standpoint, that the Ryder Cup's going in any way be diminished with either side winning. And I actually, as I mentioned, think it will help if Europe wins in Italy. And I also happen to believe that they have a side that is absolutely stacked with talent. I guess the same conversation that we were having about Justin Thomas, we could have about Shane Lowry and say, will he find his form because circumstance will rise him above any of the malaise that he's been dealing with throughout the course of his particular season. So is there a willingness and a desire and a want and a burning need, if you please, for the American team to win in Rome? Yeah. 100%. That definitely is a hunger that they are going to be coming across the Atlantic with. However, as these things always go, I don't think it's cut and dry. I don't think that to use the cliche that these Ryder Cups are won on paper. And when you look at it on paper, the American side is very, very impressive. And like all of you gents, we can think of so many times coming into a Ryder Cup where the U.S. side on paper looked incredibly impressive, and yet Europe was able to walk away with the victory. So I think this one's wide open too.
Yeah, and of course, a lot of that has got to do with the fact that you're quite right, it's not won or lost on paper, it's won or lost on the course. And this course is coming for a lot of comment, and I think it's probably fair to say, and understandable, Matty, that it's not been set up to suit an American player's eye in particular. You've touched on that before, but how significant are these conditions likely to be?
I think it's very, very significant. It was something that I spoke to Luke about just the other day. And while, you know, he wasn't going to reveal precisely what he was going to do, it doesn't take a genius to figure out what the recipe is going to be for that dish. And that is, they're going to bring the rough in. They're going to make that rough nice and deep. If you take a look at even running through what Lee was talking about, like Scotty Scheffler, for example, Scotty Scheffler at times is challenged off the tee. If he's alongside of, say, Wyndham Clark driving accuracy, he's 143rd on the PGA Tour. You've got people that are incredible with it on the U.S. side, and Brian Harman and Patrick Cantlay, Max Homa's very good, Xander Schauffele is very good. As Lee was referring to his overall game, which I happen to agree with Lee, that Xander is so good and so accomplished in every facet of his game that even with all that he has accomplished as a gold medalist and more, it feels like he is capable of doing even more, and he's young enough to do the same. Sam Burns, he's 128th in driving accuracy. Sam happens to be an excellent putter, though he's 11th on tour in that regard. Ricky Fowler is kind of a mixed bag. He tends to be about 30th on tour in about all of the categories. Not bad at all. Brooks Koepka, again, I like Brooks a lot. His Ryder Cup record, having been on three teams, is 6-5-1. You would think it'd be a little bit better than that. His President's Cup record, he was on one team, is right at 500 at 2-2-0. So he worries me a little bit just based on what I've seen in the past from him in terms of the game plan. He didn't demonstrate to me that he adjusted his game plan to the setup or the golf course. He was going to go out there and do what he does, which is bring a course to its knees. And in Paris, that didn't work. I think Colin Morikawa for the U.S. side is extremely strong. I think he is player. When Zach used the cliche of saying he had players that are built for this, which I understand he was using a lot of those kind of cliches, he was well-trained in that. But when you talk about Colin Morikawa, he is a ball-striking machine. He is one that I really think is very well-suited along the same lines of Brian Harman into this one. Jordan Spieth is Jordan Spieth. And somehow, the bigger the stage, he's able to quiet the voices in his mind. And when that happens, he's able to do what Jordan Spieth is able to do. I think the big question mark still remains Justin Thomas, and which Justin Thomas is going to show up. So a long-winded answer, I realize, Marcus, to the question you asked me, but there's various elements to it.
I can sit and listen to you. We can all sit and listen to you for hours, Matty. Just one more question before we let you go. It's the obvious one. Are the Americans going to end this keep saying it. I quite enjoy it. These 30 years of pain. Is it coming to an end in Rome at the start of October?
I wouldn't guarantee it. I absolutely would not guarantee it. I think there's a divide between desire and reality. And you've got a very, very strong European team. If you had to look at the balance over what would we give it, gents, the last, say, 6 weeks, maybe 8 weeks, predominantly players from Europe have been more assertive in those top spots. So if form is in fact important coming into a Ryder Cup, right now that advantage to me seems to be on the European side, at least on the top half of that field. And I think it goes even deeper than that. I wouldn't be the least bit surprised, and I'm not trying to give you a non-answer. I'm trying to be completely honest with you. I would not be surprised at all if this ended up in a draw with the teams and the way that I see that they're coming together, Marcus. But I think it's going to be an absolute battle there. And as I've said, I don't think you can win the Ryder Cup based on sensationalism, and it doesn't work based upon what you say your commitments are and what you intend to do. What happens is the shots you hit and the putts you sink. So I think this is going to be an incredibly compelling and an incredibly competitive Ryder Cup.
Well, you've set it up beautifully, Matt. And of course, you'll be part of our team on Ryder Cup Radio. Can't wait to see you in hopefully sunny Rome. Safe travels until then.
Thank you so much. Cheers, guys.
That is the top American broadcaster, Matty Adams. Well, that is interesting. Matty, who knows his onions, not entirely confident, but suggesting maybe a draw. And I've heard a few other people go down that route. How exciting a finish would that be? Now, Lee, he touched on there, Matty, Colin Morikawa, who's almost become something of a forgotten man to a degree this year after everything he's achieved for the previous few. Do you expect him to be very significant over the 3 days?
I do because of the way he plays the game. I think I almost put him into exactly the same category as like a Tommy Fleetwood. You know, like it, obviously it's always been a slight weakness of his has been his putting. His long game is incredible. You know, one of the best in the world, always has been. I think the way the course is going to be set up that week, I would certainly put him in that category. I mean, he's a dangerous player. You know, it wouldn't surprise me if he was the US top point scorer, to be honest. You know, he makes a lot of birdies. He can go on, you know, birdie runs like you've never seen. I mean, he's a fabulous player. I mean, he's proven himself the last few years and, yeah, could be very dangerous.
Yes, we shall look closely at him. And also, of course, we will follow the fortunes of Jordan Spieth very closely. You never quite know what you're going to get from Jordan, which I think is part of the joy of just being able to follow him week in, week out. But he has been explaining why this format brings out the best in his game.
Just some freedom, you know. I like to play aggressively, and typically when you have, you know, a partner beside you and you get that opportunity more often, you can not only just hit shots more aggressively, hit putts more aggressively. You always know someone's going to get it in the hole. And, you know, when it's going out there trying to make as many birdies as possible, it's just more fun. Just have more fun playing that format. I'm not sure, you know, why win percentage is that high necessarily, but I love more opportunities. It's my favorite format for sure.
So he can't wait. Just a reminder of the format. Match play, of course, each match worth 1 point. Days one and two, that's the Friday and the Saturday. We've got the four ball better ball matches and the foursome matches. That's the alternate shot matches. And then day three, the Sunday, the 12 singles encounters, a total of 28 points available. So 14.5 points are required to win the cup. 14 points are what the Americans need to retain the cup as defending champions. We have touched upon the course, Mr. Lee. What exactly should we expect from that setup in Rome?
I think it's been well documented now that if you go off piste, you go offline immediately from the fairways, it's going to be pretty horrible. So there is a premium on being a really good driver. Get the ball in play. Strategy is going to come into it. Matty mentioned that. The finish to the golf course for this type of team event that the Ryder Cup is, you know, people dragging their knuckles on the concrete coming into the last few holes at their wit's end is fantastic. There's a drivable par four with water, decisions to be made there. 17th's an evil little par three, and 18 is a par five with water. So a lot can happen, a bit like Le Golf National. Those last four holes are risk and reward all the way into the clubhouse, and it's a bit like that at Marco Simone. So you'll see whether players are going for it or if they're laying up or something in between. Strategy, team strategy, foursomes and four ball is going to be paramount over those closing holes. And, of course, it does build in excitement because the difference between triumph and disaster will be very slim.
Yeah. And, of course, Lee, the Italians, as a general rule, are not backwards in coming forwards when it comes to showing their emotions. So it's going to be bedlam. It's going to be bedlam for 3 days, isn't it?
It's going to be crazy. I just can't wait to see it all, to be honest. But, yeah, I mean, they're very, very passionate people, the Italians. So I just hope they come out in force, the locals, and really support, because I do think it's going to be a very special Ryder Cup. And I think because we've all been speaking about how close this match is going to be, it could be the difference. You know, that crowd could be the difference in the end. So, yeah, it's going to be very exciting.
OK, well, Matty was, I think, edging towards Europe, but suggesting it could finish as a draw. What about you boys, Rob?
The thing about the Ryder Cup, okay, so Europe played the United States in Rome, and let's say the Americans go on to win for the first time in 30 years, a dominant performance once again, and they soundly beat the Europeans. Okay, that happened over those 3 days. If you were to play again the next 3 days, you could get the opposite result. So we're in hindsight going to go, whoever wins, oh yeah, well, the captain was that much better and la, 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 la. But 3 days later, you could play another Ryder Cup and get a completely different result. It is on the day.
Are you trying to become a politician here?
No.
I want a prediction.
Who I want to win? Of course, I'm European. I'm half Irish, half Italian.
No, but who do you think is going to win?
I think the Europeans are going to win. I think the home draw is a massive factor. It is. And to win on foreign ground, like the Americans are trying to do, and we know it's been a 30-year hiatus.
We've mentioned that a couple of times.
You have brushed on that subject once or twice, Marcus. It's a very difficult thing to do because you're in a hostile environment. There's no nastiness, but it is raucous for the home team. And that is what the home team say the 13th man is going to be, the crowd. And when the crowd get up, because Europe are going well, you'll hear that noise all over Marco Simone. And if it's quiet, the Europeans will know that the Americans are doing the business. So either way, you're looking for silence or you're looking for raucous noise, the players out there will know how it's going.
Well, I was just looking for a prediction. I got it in the end.
Finally.
Team Europe for him. Matty, I think going that way. So, Mr. Slattery, are you going to spoil the feel-good factor inside the European camp with your prediction?
I'm actually not. I think I'm going to go with Rob on this one. I think it's going to be such a close match, and I think that could make the difference. And you know, I think we have got a great team there, and even the young players. I mean, they've proven on our tour that they can play under some serious pressure. I think we've got a great squad, and although the Americans would be slight favourites, I kind of see us as slight favourites because of the crowds. I think. Yeah, we're going to have a lot of support there, and I think it's going to make the difference in the end. That's what I think.
Wonderful stuff. Well, listen, guys, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. That was Lee Slattery and Rob Lee, and we will see if they are proved right come the end of September. It's going to be so much fun.
Did you say who you felt was going to win? I think you sort of ducked that.
Well, nobody cares what I think it's going to be. A draw as well. I really do.
Okay, you were Matty draw. Yeah,
I think so. But
it's a nail biter, then, isn't it? It's a nail biter.
I don't. None of us really have any idea.
Of course, we don't.
But we like to pretend. We like to sound as though we do. That is it from us. A reminder that the 2023 Ryder Cup begins on Friday, the 29th of September. You will be able to listen to full, uninterrupted coverage of each day's play on Ryder Cup Radio, presented by City. We'll be on air from 7 a.m. local time on the 29th, right through until the close of play. We'll also have preview shows in the week building up to the event via the official Ryder Cup websites and apps, along with reviews of each day's play, which will be available to download via your favourite podcast provider. But for now, huge thanks to Rob Lee, to Lee Slattery, and to Matty Adams. The main event is not far away. The 2023 Ryder Cup on Ryder Cup Radio and the official Ryder Cup podcast brought to you by City. From me, Marcus Buckland, for now, it's goodbye.